This song is about the positive activities of devotional service. So when we speak about renunciation, we already know now that it's not dry renunciation. It doesn't mean giving up things because they belong to Krishna, so they should be used in his service, not just left idle. Everything should be utilized. And this song gives the ideal life of a person in Krishna consciousness and all the elements therein by which one can develop one's love for Krishna and engage everything in Krishna's service. So the translation is like this. The dust from the lotus feet of pure devotees gives rise to devotional service, and service to the devotees is itself the supreme perfection and the root of the tender creeper of divine love. Who can give a verse or find a verse that from the Shastra that also confirms this? All the pundits are getting ready. Here, one's ready to speak. Mahatsevam dvara mahur mukte tamo dvaram yoshitam sangi sangam mahantaste samachita prasanta vimanyavak suridaksara voye. This is from the fifth chapter of the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and that is the which verse? Fifth canto? Second verse. Mahatsevam. So this verse proves that by serving the great souls, the Mahatmas, then the door, the dwaram, to liberation is wide open. This is how you open the door to liberation. And opposite is true. If one serves materialistic people, then the door to darkness is open. One can walk through either door. Another verse. Here he's saying, the dust from the lotus feet of pure devotees gives rise to devotional service. Who else said that? Prahlad Maharaj says it. And Vrajendra Kumar is ready to give us the verse. Luckily for us, we have shloka books on every table, except for mine. Oh, thank you very much. Okay, go ahead, Vrajendra. It's there? It is there. I'm sorry. My apologies. Prahlad Maharaj says it. Prahlad Maharaj says it in the Srimad Bhagavatam that by taking the dust of the lotus feet of pure devotees, rajobhishekam. If you take an abhishek in what? Raj means the dust from the padas of a pure devotee, then you get pure devotional service. You have the verse? Seventh canto. And there's another one as well. Yes. Page number?
236.
Page 236. Belt it out, please. Sing it in melodious voice.
Sing it. Naisam matis tvada urukramagrim spritas Spritasti anarthopagamo yat artaha mahi saman pado rajo abhishekam nishkinchananam na vriniti yavat. Unless they spear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely free from material contamination, persons very much inclined towards materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, in this way one can be freed from the material contamination.
Proof positive. Thank you very much. Good citation. Very nice. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we know that the great devotee, Kalidas, was very fond of three substances that he obtained from the Vaishnavas. What are those three substances that are very powerful in advancing one in devotional service? Oh, give him a shot.
Dust of pure devotee.
Dust, what else?
prasad eaten by a pure devotee.
Yes.
And third one is charanamrit.
Charanamrit?
Yeah.
The water which is washed the feet of a pure devotee. So Kalidas was expert at taking the remnants of food of all the Vaishnavas in Bengal. Thank you. Of all the Vaishnavas in Bengal. So he used to go to the Vaishnavas and he would bring them nice food stuff. And then he'd beg for their remnants. And if they didn't give them, then he'd take them by trick. So one day he went to Jadu Thakur's house. And Jadu Thakur and his wife were exalted Vaishnavas. And he brought him, he brought Jadu Thakur some very nice mangoes. And he said, please, take these mangoes and then give me the remnants. And I will take them to make advancement in devotional service. Jadu Thakur objected. He said, you're an exalted person from an exalted family. I'm a low-class person. I cannot possibly give you the remnants. He asked also for his foot dust, and he wouldn't give it either. So Kalidas gave Jadu Thakur those mangoes, and he went outside and he hid in the yard. And when Jadu Thakur's wife offered those mangoes to her husband, he offered them to the Lord, and then he ate those mangoes. Then, after he and his wife had finished eating the mangoes, she took them outside and threw them into the ditch where all their other refuse was thrown. And Kalidas came out of hiding, and he found those mangoes, mango pits, and he began enjoying the remnants of the pure Vaishnavas who had taken those mangoes. And he is acclaimed to have taken the remnants of every great Vaishnav in Bengal. That's his reputation. So one day, when he came to the Jagannath Puri temple, there's a place just outside the temple where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come and wash his lotus feet before entering the temple. He had forbidden anyone to take that water because it's against the etiquette to take the water of the feet of a Vaishnav in or near the temple. But Kalidas reached out one day as Mahaprabhu was washing his feet and he took that water once, twice, thrice. And then Mahaprabhu said, enough. I've given you my mercy as far as I can. In his heart, Kaviraj Goswami says, Mahaprabhu was very pleased with Kalidas. That's why he allowed him that kind of mercy, because he knew his faith in Vaishnavas. So does taking the dust of the feet of a Vaishnav mean physically you have to track them down and take that dust or the food stuff? Is there another meaning to it? And if so, what is that meaning of taking the dust of the feet of a Vaishnav? Yes, you're going to say. You can turn it on.
Following instructions.
Yes. So if one follows the instructions of the devotee, then this is also considered to be taking the dust of the lotus feet of the devotee, one's following the instructions. So as one may go around and taking foot dust and all these kinds of things and then do whatever they want. And this is contrary to pure devotional service. So one must also follow. So he says, the dust of the lotus feet of pure devotees gives rise to devotional service. So that means taking the orders, taking the instruction or the suggestion of the pure devotee and then following them. Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahu shaka hyanantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that those who are on the spiritual path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. They have one goal. By the way, do we have a message coming in from the spiritual realm? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Rama. We'll have to soak it in a bucket of water to. What were we saying? Last thing was. Oh, Vyavasayatmika Bhut here. That generally, if someone's in spiritual life, they're resolute in purpose, their aim is one. Mind is fixed, Krishna says. And what is the fixation on the order of the spiritual master? One receives an order and takes it as one's life and soul. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this in his commentary to this verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Bahu Shaka means many branch, hi anantas, unlimited branches. If one is not fixed on the order of the spiritual master, then one's intelligence is many branched. You can think of so many things to do besides devotional service. So fixing one's mind, and this means also one should regularly fix one's determination and one's goals in devotional service. So what I was going to say is that this is a very good time of year to fix your and refix and rewrite and revisit your goals in devotional service. So, you know, in the secular world, there's this activity around, this is called New Year's, kind of an arbitrary New Year that has been declared many years ago. Actually, we celebrate our New Year at a different time. But the whole secular world is celebrating this New Year, so we can also take advantage of this. And this New Year coming up on the 1st of January, many people write and revisit their goals for the year. Do you ever do this? Anybody here write your goals? You ever heard of New Year's resolutions? This is a popular thing in America. People write down all the resolutions, all the bad habits they're going to give up, all the good habits they're going to adopt for the new year. So one of them, there's a marked increase in activities at health clubs all over America. And that lasts for about 3 weeks during January. Everyone says, I'm going to get healthy and lose weight in the new year. And they go for 1, 2, 3 weeks, and then it goes like this. It drops off really fast. However, there are many kinds of goals that we can make for ourselves in devotional service for our advancement. And if here's a little trick, how to set goals. Are you ready? Simple way. Decide what you want to do and then write it down. There's something very powerful about writing down your goals because you're committing to them in writing and they're going from subtle to the gross. You're putting it on the page. And then you have to look at those goals on a regular basis because where attention goes, energy flows. And if you have your attention on your goals, then your mind will naturally help you seek those goals. So what are some of the goals that you could make in the new year to improve your devotional service? Just anything that you've been thinking about where you want to improve your devotional service, and what would you write on that paper for your goals for the new year? You're going to write a chapter of Bhagavad Gita a day you're going to chant, right? Nice goal. Are you going to write that one down? Okay. Looks like you're about to do it right now. Okay, good. That's right. You have the everything's coming into place already. So write that down. What's another one? You said? Srimad Bhagavatam reading. Okay, you could write it down, Srimad Bhagavatam reading. I suggest that when you write your goals, you make them very specific. The more specific it is, the more you're apt to go towards that goal. So if you say Srimad Bhagavatam reading, that's a good goal, definitely. But how could you make it more specific? You're going to finish the 8th through 12th canto. Okay, that's more specific. And between January 1st and December 31st of 2010, Sri Govindadatta will complete cantos 8 through 12 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then you might want to, you know, think how to break it down. You can look at that little chart we have, page by page, BSH, or, you know, just see how many pages there are and figure out how many a day you have to do or how many a month that you have to do to achieve your goal, right? Then you've got something, you know, vyavasayatmika buddhi, or your intelligence is fixed on a goal that's taking you back to Godhead. After all, you're going to be 1 year older in 1 year anyway, right? So you might as well grab on to some goals that will take you forward in devotional service, because the year will just go by without, if you don't do anything. But if you do something, then you'll find that you've grown in devotional service in 1 year. Let's have two more suggestions for some goals that you can set for the new year. Increase the chanting of your rounds. That's always a good place to go. This is one of the fundamental practices of chanting, our rounds. So if you look into chanting your rounds, you can increase the number of rounds that you chant and write that down. Make a goal for the new year. Very nice. One more. Yes. Take notes in class on a regular basis. I made that goal last year. One of my goals was to capture everything. And so I carry a little book around with me. Whenever I sit and listen to class, I always write down the main points. And I have them. I have stacks of these little things and big ones too, where I can go back and see what everyone said. I take the essence of it. A lot of times after a good class, someone will ask, you know, what did they say? Have you ever seen this? One time I was in Los Angeles. Someone gave a great class. Actually, I wasn't at the class. I had just flown in from San Francisco, and I got to Los Angeles. The devotees were coming out of the class, and they said, you really missed it. It was a great class. So I asked one of my godbrothers, I said, really? What was it about? And he goes, I don't know, but it was really good. But if you write down the main points in the class, then you'll have them. And a lot of times it helps to go over it too, and you can go and tell someone what the class was about, and you go through the main points. This is very good. It helps you to solidify things. It's also a good idea. Prabhupada gave us this direction that you should write something every day. Even if it's a short little sentence or a short paragraph, your realizations, because it helps you solidify your realizations. So whatever you've learned for the day or for the week, take a little time to sit down and write them down. Write about it. And when you write something, then you become intimately connected with it. If you want to go in deeply into a verse, study the verse and then write something about it from your own realization and pull in verses like we're doing here. Learn how to pull in verses from here, there, everywhere and write them down. And then it'll be right on the tip of your mind all the time. It helps solidify that. So writing, this is a very nice goal for the new year. So this is one thing that you can do, a practical thing when this new year is coming up. Write down some goals. And whatever comes into your mind, you know, you can attain these things in devotional service if you plan for them and you make a goal, and Krishna will help. Okay, so the second verse, this is positive devotional service. How to be renounced? Do all positive activities in devotional service. Make plans how to become more active in devotional service, how to do more things for Krishna. This is true renunciation, according to the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Okay, so the second verse says, with great care, I observe holy days like Ekadashi and Janmashtami. Today just happens to be Ekadashi. For they are the mother of devotion. So what about this? This is a very active, positive kind of renunciation. Observing holy days like Ekadashi. What are some things that you could do to plan ahead for the year to observe Ekadashi? Okay, first of all, is to know when they are, right? There is an online service that's available that will remind you when all the holy days are. Who has that service? Who gets it? Okay, so anyone who wants that service, you should ask Sri Govindadatta or Ramananda Sakha or Hansapriya, and they can tell you how to sign up for that, because a couple of days before the Ekadashi comes, you'll get in your inbox an email that tells you the Ekadashi. Then you can click on a link and it will tell you all about the Ekadashi also. And that goes for all the special days on the Vaishnav calendar. Every appearance day, disappearance day that's marked on the Vaishnav calendar, you'll get in your inbox. And then you'll know when it's coming up. So this is a very important point. Know when the Ekadashis are. Put them down so you can anticipate them and get ready for them, right? What are some things you can do on Ekadashi to help you observe? Chant extra rounds. Srila Prabhupada asked us to chant 25 rounds on Ekadashi instead of 16. So if you plan ahead and you can do extra rounds on Ekadashi, what else can you do on Ekadashi? Extra reading. What else? Giving up grains, beans. There's several levels of fasting on Ekadashi. One is that you can don't take grains or beans on Ekadashi. Never take grains or beans on Ekadashi. Or you can just take water all day on Ekadashi. Or you can take nothing. You can just dry fast all day. So that starts sunrise to sunrise. Don't take anything. No water even. And then you'll have the rest of the day free because you don't have to eat or drink. And that means you don't have to process it also. You notice when you don't even drink water that you don't have to eliminate water. It saves a lot of time and energy. And food, that's a big deal because you have to cook it. You have to think what you're going to eat. Then you have to cook it. Then you offer it. Then you eat it. Then you have to eliminate. And all that takes time and energy, a lot of time and energy. We have no idea how much time and energy until you actually fast on one of those days. And then you'll see, hey, I have plenty of time. I wish I could do this every day. So fasting is a good idea. Fasts are good. This is called dhritavrta. You fast on Ekadashi. Don't take water even. Try that some Ekadashi. You can also do that on the appearance days of Lord Vishnu, like on Janmashtami. You can just don't take any kind of water. So the next day, if you fast from everything, you can break your fast by taking water. If you fast from grains and beans, then the next day you have to break your fast at a certain time by taking some grains or beans. And you'll know the timing if you subscribe to this service online, this Vaishnava service, to tell you when to break your fast also. There's a window of time for Ekadashis. Okay, and then these are the mother of devotion, and with the greatest reverence and love, I choose as my dwelling place the transcendental abode of Sri Krishna. What about that? Well, it's like if you go on a vacation and you go to some place where there's no temple, but it's a heavenly place, it's hell. No devotees, no temple, but it's a really beautiful place. It's a horrible thing. So we always live in places where there's devotees, where there's Krishna, and then we'll be happy. Choose as our dwelling place the holy dham. So this is a holy dham, because the devotees are here and Krishna's here, and the holy name is being chanted. So Krishna appears here. In the company of loving devotees, I will visit all those places where my Lord Gaurasundar traveled and performed his pastimes. So you can plan to do this. Go on a pilgrimage to all the holy places where Lord Chaitanya traveled and sanctified those places with his lotus feet. You know, all over South India, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled in South India, you'll read about this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he visited places coming and going here, there, and everywhere. And if you try to keep up with the pace that he kept, it's impossible practically, because I've tried. We took the section from the Chaitanya Charitamrita of his travels to South India, and several years in a row, we tried to go to every single place, and it was very difficult. But in all those places, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has gone and he's established a little shrine to the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in all the places that he went. So you can go and visit those places and you can spend 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, take a year and just travel around to the holy places. How long did Lord Balaram take when he traveled around to all the holy places? Approximately. How about Lord Nityananda? 20 years. 20 years traveling to all the holy places, here, there, and everywhere. You'll never come to the end of it. There's so many holy places in Bhartvarsha. And you'll feel like you're in the spiritual world. You can go to all these different temples and just visit and see the Lord in his different forms. So this is a practice. You can go and visit. You can do it in California, too. Next time you want to take a little break, just start Northern California. Where would you start? Berkeley. Go to the Berkeley Temple, you can go see Shri Radha Gokulananda, right? Then where would you stop next? You better get this one right. Okay. Then you'd stop in San Jose and you see Shri Radha Madan Mohan, right? And then where would you go? Then? Los Angeles. And you'd see? Shri Rukmini Dwarkadesh. Then where would you go? San Diego. Who would you see? Shri Radha Giridhari. Then where would you go? Laguna Beach. And who would you see? And if you keep Panchatapa, and if you keep going down to Mexico, who knows how many of these. See, by the grace of a pure devotee, Prabhupada went all over the planet, and now Krishna's everywhere. You can go over China and do the same thing. Go to China, go to Europe, anywhere in the world, you can go on pilgrimage and see Krishna. I've done this before. When Bhuvaneshwar came to fix his visa, he's the cook in Vrindavan. So he came to stay with me. He had been in Vrindavan for 10 years, and then they said, enough, you got to go renew your visa, start over again. So he came and stayed at my house. He thought it would take about 2 weeks to renew his visa, and it took about 2 minutes. So as soon as he got his visa, he said, I want to go back to Vrindavan. I said, hold on, you just got here. I'll take you to a few places that are also Vrindavan. So I drove him down the coast. We started in Berkeley, and then we went all the way down, and we saw all those different temples. It was very nice, actually. We stopped in the place. We stayed a couple nights, went to all the Mongol Artiks, and just saw the Lord and, you know, went on pilgrimage. So you can do that. Go see the Lord anywhere. This is purifying. If you're driving somewhere and you're thinking, I'm going to see Krishna, you can bring him some gifts. And when you go to see him, then it's very pleasant. You're liberated, in a liberated condition. So this is one of the devotional practices. Number four, my mind always begs to hear the music of the mridanga, and my heart dances in ecstasy whenever I hear the kind of kirtan established by Lord Gaurachandra. Have you ever had this experience walking in some city, and you're going down and you're feeling bewildered by all the big buildings and all the shoppers and everything, and then you hear in the distance something? Ever had that? You hear, then you come a little closer, you can hear the mridanga, and then the chanting is going on, and immediately you just want to jump in the kirtan and feel the ecstasy of the kirtan. Ever had that experience? Maybe if it's not random, maybe you're going to meet the devotees and you know they're there. Even when you know they're there and you're walking through the city and you finally get there, then you feel that you're home. I have this experience, especially in Los Angeles. You know, we go down every year to help cook for the big, gigantic feast. They feed about 15,000 to 20,000 people at that Ratha Yatra. And Nirkula has been cooking there for about 25 years, that feast. So I go down there to help her with the cooking, and sometimes we'll be in the kitchen for like 5 days cooking. And then after cooking for several days in the kitchen, then you're with devotees all day long, from morning to night, and you're in that area of Watseka Avenue, where Rukmini Dwarkadish is there. No, you don't see any other activity but devotional service. Then you go and you join the Ratha Yatra procession. Lord Jagannath's going down Venice, down the pathway by the beach, comes all the way down to Venice Beach, where the pavilion is, and all day long you're there in the association of devotees. Then, at the end of the day, when you have to leave, you have to cross over this Venice Beach strip. It's the most degraded strip, perhaps, in the world. People come there for all kinds of depraved reasons, and the vibration there is extremely thick and heavy, materialistically. So coming out of that environment from the Ratha Yatra and crossing over, I always feel like I'm crossing from the spiritual world through the Viraja River, the demarcation point, which marks the difference between the material and spiritual worlds, and going into that material energy. You can feel it. It's palpable. It's also the dark material energy. You can feel it there. So there's a difference when you live in the association of devotees and you're around the transcendental sound vibration and the activities of devotional service. It's uplifting, and you can feel the difference when you go out. And when we go on Sankirtan, when we go out to present door-to-door, for instance, Krishna book and Bhagavad Gita and all these other wonderful books that Srila Prabhupada has given us, are we going into the material energy? Yes? Everyone agree? Anyone disagree? Come on, someone disagree. We'll get two sides. We can start an argument here. Do you actually enter into the material energy when you go out to distribute books? Yes? You disagree?
That question comes if you are, first of all, outside of the material energy.
So if you go on Sankirtan, you're doing a transcendental service. It may appear that you're in the material energy, but you're under the protection of the internal energy. Right? How do you know? Can you prove it? Okay, that's good. That's something from Shastra also. You know where it's from? Somebody can help her out? Pundits in the front row? There's a statement from Yudhisthira to Vidura. Bhavad Vida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Svayam Vibho Tirtha Kurvanti Tirtani Swantak Stena Gadaprita. He actually says what you said, perfect, beautiful citation, that the devotees carry the Lord within their heart and therefore they're tirthas. You've heard the word tirtha. What does it mean? Huh? Pilgrim place, literally what does it mean? The word tirtha. Yes.
It's a bridge between yes. material and spiritual worlds.
That's right. It's a place where you cross over. You cross over from one energy to the next, a tirtha. So that place, like Vrindavan, it's a crossing over place. You've crossed from material energy into the spiritual. And association with devotees, they are tirthas because they carry Krishna within their heart. And by meeting them, we actually cross into the spiritual energy. You've had that experience, right? If you have the association of an advanced devotee, you can sit in the presence of that devotee and feel that now I've entered into the spiritual world. You may be sitting anywhere, New York City, but you're transformed. You cross over. There's a tirtha there, right? So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that someone who's engaged in devotional service is under the protection of the divine nature, under the spiritual internal energy. Where does he say that? Okay, give him the mic. Nice citation. Ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Mahatmanas tu mam partha daivim prakritim ashritaha. Ashrita means he has shelter under the divine nature. So a Mahatma means somebody who's engaged in Krishna service, and that person, wherever he or she goes, is given the protection of the internal energy. So if someone goes out, for instance, for the mission of distributing books, it may appear that he or she is walking through Fremont. But actually, that person is in the spiritual energy. It's like a little bubble Krishna creates. And you can see it in the eyes and faces of the devotees. They're radiant with happiness. And they get a special energy where they want to do more and more and more. This morning we had a national Sankirtan call, conference call, with devotees from Iowa, and Pennsylvania, Vedavit Prabhu in Toronto called in, and we had devotees from ISV and various other places around the country, and Pravina was on the call. And when she began speaking about the marathon here, she said, the marathon's been going on. We've just been in ecstasy for the last two months since November going out. She said, I hope we can just carry it on another couple months. Didn't want to stop. She's feeling this special impetus to go on with this service. And in normal kinds of work, people, they'll work and work and work, and they'll think, when can I take a break? But in devotional service, when devotees are under the protection of the spiritual energy, they go on and on, and they're thinking, how can we do this more? How can we figure out how to have less time for eating and sleeping and have more time for devotional service? Because it's actually enlivening. It's invigorating the spiritual energy, the internal energy. You can feel it when you engage in transcendental service. So when we're in the association of devotees and we're performing devotional service, then we have real renunciation. When you're feeling happiness and the momentum of doing service, everything else becomes insignificant. You don't even have time for it, right? Haridas Thakur, sitting in his bhajan kutir, chanting all day long, 180 rounds a day. That's a lot of rounds. And he was born in a Muslim family. So here he is, a Vaishnav saint, respected by everybody. And the local policeman became very envious. He was a Muslim. And he was thinking, why is this person respected by so many people? This is the nature of envy. Envy means when you see someone successful and being glorified, then I think, let him be dragged down somehow or other. Let me say something to demean this person's character, or hopefully that they won't be successful. This is material consciousness. Spiritual consciousness means When you see someone successful and making advancement in spiritual life, your heart rejoices and you think, oh, how nice. There's competition in the spiritual world, but the result of the competition is that the person who loses glorifies the other person within their heart and thinks, how nice that they pulled ahead, that they did better service for Krishna than me. This is the difference. There's no envy. So this policeman, Ramachandra Khan, he had envy in his heart for Haridas Thakur. So he made a diabolical arrangement with a prostitute and said, we are going to send you there in the middle of the night and make Haridas Thakur fall down, and then we'll come arrest him, we'll expose him to the whole community and show that actually he was just a charlatan. So the prostitute went along with the idea, and she dressed herself in an attractive manner, and she went to the little hut where Haridas Thakur was chanting all night long in the moonlight. She came and she stood in the doorway and she made many feminine gestures and suggested to Haridas Thakur that I'm here, why don't you enjoy with me? Haridas Thakur said, a great idea, but let me finish my rounds. I will definitely enjoy with you just as soon as I finish my round. So he sat there all night long. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, on and on through the night. And the prostitute sat and listened all night long. The next morning, as the sun began rising, she went back to the police constable and told him, I wasn't able last night because he had to finish his rounds, but he promised me that the next night he would enjoy with me. So she went back. And the next night, the same thing happened. He said, I'm so sorry that I disappointed you last night. I didn't finish my rounds, but tonight, certainly I'll be able to finish. So all night long, he chanted, and she listened to the pure devotee chanting the holy name. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And again, he didn't finish his rounds. And she went home and said, certainly tomorrow. And the third night, as she sat and listened, she also began to chant along, saying, Hare, 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 Hare. And then she felt remorse within her heart. She was purified by hearing his chanting, and she admitted to him, fell down at his feet and said, I've come here with a diabolical purpose, sent here by Ramachandra Khan to bring you down. And Haridas Thakur said, I was already aware of that, but I let you stay here to hear my chanting over the last couple of days for your own purification. She said, what can I do to rectify the situation? He said, give up your occupation, sit down in one place, worship Tulsi, and chant Hare Krishna. So she became a sadhu. She sat down in one place and she began to chant, and she became glorified as a great devotee just by the association of Haridas Thakur. So if we're engaged in devotional service, if our vow is every day to complete our rounds and to complete our prescribed devotional service, then when Maya comes and gives some suggestion, Prabhupada said that Maya is like a silver-tongued salesman who comes to your door. Just open up for a second. And as soon as you open the door, he puts his foot in the door and then keeps talking. Oh, yeah, I guess that's a good idea. I will buy one. So don't open the door unless it's a devotee knocking with a book. But Maya knocks at the door. Be so busy, have so many other reasons and excuses why you can't open the door and listen, even for a second, that you don't hear that silver tongue speech that she'll give you and the excuse to go away from Krishna. So this is real renunciation. Text number 6. Every day, I skipped number 5. Very important verse. I feel supreme bliss when I behold the deity forms of the divine couple, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, and I conquer all worldly illusions by honoring the Lord's prasadam. Number 6. Every day, Goloka Vrindavan appears in my home, When I see Lord Hari being worshipped there, my joy knows no bounds when I see the Ganges, a river of nectar emanating from the Lord's lotus feet. The sight of the Tulsi plant soothes my soul, for I know she gives pleasure to Lord Krishna. I feel that my life has been fulfilled when I honor Shak, a green leafy vegetable preparation that is a favorite of Lord Chaitanya's. Whatever Bhaktivinoda obtains that furthers devotional service to Sri Krishna, he accepts every day with the greatest joy. So we began the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and the subject matter is action in Krishna consciousness, renunciation through acting in Krishna consciousness. And the practical renunciation of devotional service means to engage everything in Krishna's service, and there are many wonderful activities through which we engage our senses. They become purified, our heart becomes purified, and then our activities in life become purified and all connected with Krishna. Hare Krishna. So now we're going to have an artik, and let's put all the books away and all the asans away efficiently, as quickly as possible, and then we'll have Krishna Prasadam. Go Premanande, Hari Hari Bol.